And right now, you might love the place we are going to this morning. Sholva Mollison Huebei is calling home from Sweden and the city of Gothenburg. Sholva grew up in Karamea, next door to Kahurangi National Park, and went to Karamea Area School. You can go right through there. Then it was off to Canterbury University for a BSc in Geography, and he left Aotearoa in 2018. What else? Worked as a chef in Stockholm. Moved to Gothenburg, the second largest city, at around 500,000 people on Sweden's western coast. Went there in 2020 and is still currently a part-time chef while he completes his master's in geography at the University of Gothenburg. Sholva lives with his partner Matilda, who's Swedish, in one of the city's central suburbs. They've been together for about a year. Kia ora, Sholva. Welcome. How are you?
Yeah, going good. Good morning to you.
Hey, is that the colloquial Swedish greeting?
Yeah, exactly. You got that one. You can go a long way with that in this country.
A long way with hey. Now, just your background first. You've got special memories, I imagine, of Karamea. It's a lovely little place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's about as far away from Europe as you can get, as the bird flies, and sort of culturally. I mean, I don't miss it, but I think about it a lot. It's a beautiful spot.
Great driving there on that road from Westport. Out of interest, how do you think growing up there shaped you as a person?
It sounds strange, but you really do meet a lot of people, you know, a lot of interesting people in a place like Karamea. The 700 people that do sort of make it there are usually, well, they were quite interesting. Definitely made a big impact on me growing up.
Is it still home? You know, when people say, where are you from? That's still the answer.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the home in my heart, but it's a bit hard if anyone asks to sort of explain exactly where it is, because no one's ever heard of the place. But I mean, yeah, that's the first port of call when I get back to New Zealand, I'd say.
There was a pivotal experience, I think, when you were younger that made you start to see the world differently. You lived as a family in Southeast Asia for a year when you were 12 or 13. And together with hearing stories from your parents of their OEs, all that kind of made you want to travel?
Yeah, it's a classic one. The Kiwis that head over to London, that kind of thing. I wouldn't say what I'm doing now is much different to that. You know, it's just the language is obviously different and the culture's a bit different. But, yeah, it took that getting that plane ticket and doing it.
Yeah, as it does. You've got a lot of family. Have you living in your part of the world now on your mother's side in Sweden and Norway?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so most of my mother's family lives around Oslo. My mother lives here in Gothenburg as well, and then also have a bit of family in Stockholm.
Okay, well, you're well looked after for family. And you live with your partner, Matilda, quite near the middle of town, is it?
Yeah, 10 minutes walk down to the sort of the main street of town, and it's an easy city to get around, but it definitely makes a big difference when you are so close to town.
I was seeing that you're not far from quite a famous amusement park, which has Europe's largest free fall ride, which is really mammoth. That it's got a free fall ride 381 feet high.
Yeah, I still haven't been there, but it's one of those things that whenever you talk about Gothenburg to a Swede, that's probably their first memory of Gothenburg is this Liseberg theme park, and it's a big draw card in the summer. It changes the scene.
I did one free fall. That's possibly all I need. There's also the Universium. What's the Universium?
Yeah, so that's like a big, it's a really nice sort of natural history, a museum in a way, but it explains a lot about the sort of the natural world and that kind of thing, which is, that'd be a good place to have a look if you come here on a rainy day, which is, quite often.
It's got a rainforest inside. It's got a big chemistry lab, reptile enclosure, space pods, large size replicas of existing space habitats. That looks cool. All right, just about you. You're still part-time as a chef, so you're a good cook. You're a good cook. Where did that talent come from?
I'd worked in a butchery for a year and a half in Wellington, and, you know, we would always sort of get, you know, the boss would he'd give you the tips on what to sort of cook, and I'd always had a passion for it. And then when I sort of, started working in the kitchen just as a dishy and kind of just moved up from there, but I don't think it really takes, it just takes passion, really. And I'm not doing anything too sort of too serious. It's just, you know, it's good food and a nice bath. I get a kick from it when I get in the kitchen.
Yeah, and it pays the rent. Yeah.
Mm.
I know Stockholm's a centre of great cuisine, and I think Gothenburg's not far behind. So, would you create different meals there compared to what you might serve up to people in Christchurch?
You know, it's called New Nordic. I mean, is the easiest way to describe it. But I really think it would fit really well in New Zealand, and you know, in Christchurch, there's a lot of really good, you know, produce all over New Zealand. So, it wouldn't be too hard to sort of to transfer that.
Do you and Matilda eat out much, as well as you cooking out? Do you eat out?
Yeah. There's a lot of cool restaurants, and there's, you know, there's still places in Gothenburg that I haven't been to yet and that are on the list. If you're earning the local money, you can sort of afford to do these things. Probably, yeah, once a week would be about average for us, I'd say.
Have you been to Heaven 23? I was reading about it, which is inside a hotel that's totally wind-powered and recycles 95% of its waste. Have you heard of that place?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't actually been there. It's about 5 minutes from the apartment too. They got a really good the tip there is they got a really good like a shrimp sandwich is their real classic one. But I would probably hop over a place that's a restaurant that's inside of a hotel would be sort of not the top of my list. But I have heard good things about this place.
Speaking of shrimp sandwiches, you told Dave that an experience that can't be missed is eating freshly caught langoustine on bread with mayonnaise and a slice of lemon. Is it a shrimp or a lobster? Is it a shrimp or a lobster?
So a langoustine is like it's a small crayfish. Traditionally, it's cooked in salt water, beer, and you know, dill that's gone to seed. It's like the crown of dill. And you know, so I know a guy. I was out on the islands about this time last year, and I met a fisherman that actually, you know, cooked it up on the you know, literally cooked it up on the wharf when he got back in. And that's, you know, that's not an uncommon experience. I mean, you can see the same thing in Oslo as well. It's, you know, there's just a sort of a part of the culture there that, you know, that's what they did a couple of hundred years ago. And yeah, it is really, it's spectacular. It's really something special.
I wish I'd had breakfast. We're talking with Shelva Mollison-Kerbe, and your thesis, which is partly why you're there in Gothenburg, your thesis is to do with the relationship between public transport and social isolation. Can you tell us more?
I'm working to measure the level of social exclusion in Gothenburg. So I've developed this index of social exclusion over the last 10 years. In certain areas, we're seeing the sort of the suburbs that are the most sort of isolated geographically. They have a stronger need and a bigger impact from this public transport. You know, I'm going to stand up and defend the thesis at the end of the month. And that's going to be my recommendation, is that these places here, you know, that's where the most impact can be sort of created.
So the better the public transport, essentially, the better the social environment, and it's worth the investment. It's that kind of...
Yeah, but if they're further out of the edges, it's going to be more... it's going to have a higher impact.
You've got great public transport there, haven't you?
Yeah, I don't have a car. I mean, in the summer, most of the people would bike.
You've got boats there as well, haven't you?
Yeah. So you can take the boats over to the Hissingen side of the river, which is the like a up-and-coming part of town. There's a lot of sort of new development there. And then if you want to get out to the islands, you can do that as well.
How many islands have you got?
I'm not exactly sure, because it's just it's an archipelago, you see. So I've been to four of the islands, and I think even the locals haven't been to all of them. Yeah, you can jump on the boat and get out to, you know, the islands and in about a half hour, and it's just absolutely gorgeous in the summer.
Out of interest, because you would have thought of this, and it's a topic of conversation back home, public transport and to what extent we need cars. How do Swedes manage when you need to stock up at the supermarket or, you know, whisk around and see relatives and pick up kids from after school sport and so on? Is public transport good enough to do a lot of that with or not?
Yeah, I think there's a few answers to this question. The first one, you can definitely do it. And you'll see a lot of people in the summer will have, you know, there's a lot of people that have sort of e-bikes with place for, you know, kids and groceries and that sort of thing. But then the other big thing that I never really saw a lot of in New Zealand is young people that sort of have access to a car but don't necessarily drive every day. And then there's also, you see apartment buildings that have sort of cars that you can, you know, you can sort of borrow.
You, I think, in an email to us said the quality of life for a young person is better there than what you experienced in New Zealand. In what ways?
You know, the big ones are definitely the accommodation and the salary. I mean, I made decent money in New Zealand, but when I come over here, and bear in mind, I was chefing, which isn't the best paid job in the world. It was really a totally new experience to be sort of paying decent rent for a warm and dry house. You're not sort of shivering in a cold and damp flat in the Yarra Valley, even though that is a great experience and I absolutely enjoyed it. You know, you come over here and it sort of is, yeah, the, you know, people probably legally wouldn't be option to sort of have that kind of accommodation. And yeah, obviously the ability to go travel around Europe, jump on a train, jump on a plane or jump on a boat and get down to, you know, explore the rest of Europe. It's, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that I really think, you know, all young people should have the ability to experience, you know, in their lifetimes.
Even though the environment for that's been a bit dicey lately, what with COVID and now Ukraine. So are you traveling again? Are you traveling again yet?
This year I've been overseas 3 times already. I went to London and then I was down in Switzerland twice. And my friend, best friend, got married. Things don't feel too locked down anymore.
Okay. Shalva Mollison-Kwebe is talking to us. So the west coast of Sweden, I'm told, is beautiful. How does it compare with the South Island?
There's nothing that compares to the South Island, but I mean, it is a very beautiful part of the world. You know, very sort of, the summer especially, you just imagine, you know, sort of rocky bays and rocky cliffs, and you can sort of jump in the sea and, you know, hang out, eat strawberries. Very beautiful part of the world.
Does the average Swede have the same connection with nature, do you think, that a lot of Kiwis take for granted?
No, they're probably a bit more interested in, you know, the sort of the cultural side of life. Bear in mind that I don't think the same situation maybe applies in the north of Sweden, where they really genuinely are, you know, they're well out in the wilderness. But I think, yeah, generally in the south, the people aren't sort of so interested in getting out and hiking or, you know, mountain biking and that kind of thing.
On the Global Destination Sustainability Index, Gothenburg's been the world's most sustainable city year after year. So lots of green space, innovative initiatives. You see all that?
Yeah. It is genuinely, you know, a garden city in the same way that that Christchurch is, but it's, you know, it's not just a park, it's a forest.
You like to run in those forest parks when you're not studying or working, don't you?
Yeah, you can be from, you know, the centre of town to what feels like complete wilderness in, you know, not even 20 minutes. It is a special thing.
You're running by yourself in the city.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it genuinely is. It takes 20 minutes, you know. You just go from, you know, the hustle and bustle to the green of nature. I think that's one of the big things that really helped me to adjust and sort of fit in here is having that time to reset. Because that was, you know, living in Wellington, you can get up, you know, Mount Vic or, you know, up Macro with the mountain bike, that kind of thing. You know, I wouldn't want to live in a city where you couldn't do that, you know.
Yeah. There's a big waterfront park with a giant free sauna on legs. It's a multi-story sauna.
Yeah, the sweat palace or whatever it's called. I think that's something that I want to bring back to New Zealand, the sauna culture. I think it's, or maybe it's what I'd miss if I moved home. I think it's a really good way to spend your Friday or Saturday evening, just have a sauna and jump in the sea, you know.
Yeah, that's the hard part, isn't it? The sauna's nice, and then there's the cold plunge. But you like that?
Yeah. I mean, I will say this: the Swedes, they really do. They're really enjoying the ocean swim in the middle of winter. I wouldn't be able to handle that without, you know, nearly boiling myself in the sauna first.
How cold does it get there, that ocean?
There was definitely a few days where we jumped into, you know, holes in the ice. The west coast is generally a lot more mild than the Baltic, so, you know, the Baltic side, it genuinely does get quite cold, but you'd say, you know, the west coast, you can expect that it's not going to get below zero that often.
But you have great summers, and the longest summers in Sweden, that's because of the Gulf Stream, I think. So cold winters, but lovely summer weather.
Yeah, when the nights just sort of never end, it's so light, and it's, you know, it's warm and still, and it's gorgeous. I remember when I first moved in 2018 and I was working at a bakery, so I started work at about 5 in the morning and sort of biking to work. It was sort of the peak of summer, so the strawberry fields was really, you know, really going off. And you could smell, the strawberries were so sweet, you could sort of smell them as you biked past, and it was sort of, you know, bright sunlight. It was, you know, not a, it wasn't a pre-dawn ride. It was, you know, full sunlight. There's just a lot more energy when, there's a lot more energy in your body when it's that kind of, you know, when the summers are like that.
Yeah, that's an evocative description for us. It's so interesting where you live. Many Scots settled in Gothenburg and became prominent citizens. I was reading it was nicknamed Little London once because of the influx of English. So you know about that. That's still apparent, yeah?
Yeah. You get the I think you definitely notice the British, a lot more British than on the East Coast where they built them the buildings out of stone. So that's, I think that's sort of one of the giveaways. And then, yeah, there's definitely a lot of place names. There's a few parks that are actually sort of founded by Scots, like Scottish boat builders.
It's such a hub, isn't it? You've got Volvo there, you've got SKF, IKEA, you've got the biggest youth football tournament in the world each year, Europe's biggest basketball tournament, a huge film festival. It's so vibrant.
Yeah, they're facing Europe in a way that the rest of Sweden isn't. You do sort of feel connected to, you know, the rest of Europe in a way.
What does Matilda do?
She's working in marketing for a big company here, helping with their sort of communications and that kind of thing.
So salaries are high, but you also have good allowances, don't you? Overtime, sick days, holiday pay, it's all better in Sweden?
When you compare to what I was sort of earning back in New Zealand, I think it definitely is definitely pretty attractive. You know, the tax rate is 30%, but I'm not paying to study at the moment. And unemployment benefits would definitely be would be there if you needed them. I wouldn't say everything's better. It's, you know, I think New Zealand is, you know, it's in the same league in a lot of ways, but it's, you definitely notice that the system is a lot better set up for young people, especially over here, I would say.
Okay. What would a typical rent be in New Zealand dollars in a decent sort of area close to town, say a two-bedroom apartment? What would you pay?
$1,000 New Zealand a month for a nice, you know, a two-bedroom apartment in town on a first-hand contract.
Okay.
But if you were an immigrant or had just moved, if you had just moved to Sweden, you know, like me, I would probably have to pay double. There is people out there that will try and make you pay double price for the same apartment. So yeah, this sort of first-hand contract with the rent control, it's a really good system. And that's sort of that, you know, you see young people that are sort of working a part-time job or, you know, just a low-paid job, and they can still afford to go out and do what they want to do. And the building's owned by a sort of quite a large corporation, and they can't really sort of do much as far as, you know, hiking the rent if there's a shortage in housing, for example. So I think it's an interesting system.
So you live in a beautiful, sustainable city and one of the more vibrant ones in Europe. How long can you see yourself living there? Are you there to stay now?
I'm sort of not sure, to be honest. I think I'd love to go back and experience. I love living in New Zealand. I'd love to sort of show Matilda what it's all about. I can't really say just now, but I definitely don't think I'm going to be moving home, you know, within the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, but one day you and Matilda might have a go at the Arrow Valley for a while, see how you like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be great. I told everyone about it that I've met here, how good it is, and, you know, I can't wait to get back.
Very good. So once you finish the thesis and maybe stop chefing and concentrate on other things, what might your career turn into?
The big sort of dream is to work for an architect, measuring the impact of these developments that they're doing. That would be a real big daydream, but at the moment it's definitely looking more like it's going to be sort of public transport, social policy sort of intersection.
Okay. You have an interesting life in a really interesting place. Hey, lovely of you to take time to talk to us, Shelver.
No, thank you for having me. It's good to hear some familiar voices.